Okay, go ahead.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Frisch, Judge Johnson, Judge Klopaki, the Honorable Jennifer L. Frisch presiding.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is September 21, 2020. That is A210320 Lamar versus Brown County. Counsel, I'm going to ask that you mute your microphone while you are not speaking. The marshal is showing a running clock of your time. You each will have 15 minutes for your primary argument. The appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use that. And I'm going to ask that you identify yourself and your client before you begin speaking. Judge Johnson, I see that you have your hand raised. Is that a question already? He does not.
Sorry about that. Inadvertent.
That's all right. Counsel, with all of that, I'm going to ask that you go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court and counsel. My name is James Kittner, and I represent Candy Lamar. Back in about 50 or 53 BC, a gentleman by the name of Marcus Licinius Crassus, a Roman orator and senator, part of the triumvirate, ran a fire department in the city of Rome, the capital of the Roman Empire. While running that fire department, the fire department was often dispatched to buildings, to houses, residences on fire. Essentially, what would happen is the fire department would arrive and then tell the victim of the fire, the owner of the residence, well, certainly, we've got a fire brigade, we've got the ability to put out the fire, but the cost is going to be your home. So if you want us to save your home and your belongings, we'll save it for you. Perhaps you can keep your belongings if they haven't been consumed by the fire by the time you make the decision, but the home is going to be ours as a cost of putting out the fire. And of course, the decision then remains a sort of Hobson's choice of, well, the owner resident can let everything burn or can succumb to the will of Crassus's men and give up what the owner had in exchange for saving what little they can that's left. Candy Lamar on November 23rd, 2020 faced the same choice. She faced the same choice, except this time by Brown County deputies and a veterinarian, whom all traveled to her residence, whom all visited Candy Lamar, and who said, we got a complaint from out of state and we're here. They had already planned to take the horses before they arrived, and they made Lamar's decision for her. Lamar said almost immediately upon their arrival, my goodness, my head is spinning. This is in Exhibit A, the body cam video of Investigator Reed. Later on, she says at 13:10:01, sorry, I'm like shaking now, so my brain is shutting down. Again, later she says to the deputies, I'm a little frazzled. At which point the veterinarian Peterson excuses her, says, why don't you go hang out somewhere else and we'll continue looking and talk. At 13:30:02, she says, my brain is just upset.
Mr. Kuttner, in the big picture, how many hours was Officer Reed at the property? I think they arrived about 1 o'clock p.m. What time did they leave? And I guess, what do we know what time of day it was when Ms. Lamar signed the document labeled request for hearing or voluntary surrender?
Judge Johnson, the document was signed at approximately 3 o'clock p.m., round about 5 minutes to three minutes to three. The conversation was happening first outside. Ms. Lamar was outside the squad vehicle. Her son, Ryan Houth, was nearby. She was speaking with the deputies.
So they had been interacting for approximately 2 hours. And then how long were the county people on the property? When do they leave? I'm just trying to get a picture of the beginning and end in the end.
The last horses were boarded up and taken away about 8:30 p.m.
Okay, thank you.
And so we have this conversation going between Ms. Lamar and the Brown County deputies, specifically Investigator Reed. And Investigator Reed says, Well, this can be, Ms. Lamar first asks, so I have no option is what you're telling me. And Investigator Reed then says, well, we can take them voluntarily or involuntarily. And Reed is giving her essentially no choice. Again, I mean, this is something where they're saying, we're taking your animals. It the only difference is how we're taking them. Either we can argue and have a fight about it, or you can just surrender them. Now, Ms. Lamar, under that threat, under the threat of we're taking your animals, then thought, well, either some go or they all go. So I guess my only decision is to let some go because I want to save what little I have.
Mr. Kuttner, if I look at the document called Request for Hearing or Voluntary Surrender, which she signed, there's two blanks which could be checked in the alternative. Do you have any issue with... And in each blank to be checked has, well, the first one has three lines of text. The second one has six lines of text. Do you have any issue with the way that document is worded, the way those two options are described on that form?
Yes, I do. Because I don't think that form speaks well enough to the idea that is the county supports in that there is no hope for return of the animals if the surrender is voluntary. And I don't think that Ms. Lamar understood that or was contemplating that at the time of her signature.
I did watch the videos. I spent some time watching the videos. And it does seem to me that this was all very well explained to her at the time. That I think there were some comments about you can decide if you want to voluntarily relinquish the horses or if you want a hearing. She's advised when she's given the paperwork, you could fill it out now or later. There was no pressure for her to do it right then and there. She's asking a lot of questions about the documents. She's asking questions about potential criminal charges. There's some discussion about if she voluntarily relinquishes, does she still have the ability to ask for a hearing? All of that was very clearly and explicitly explained to her at the time. Disagreeing with that?
Judge Frisch, that is correct. Investigator Reed did speak to her about these things, but her state of mind was not in a position where she would understand any of that. She was also denied the opportunity to have her own vet out. She was to look over the horses. She was denied the opportunity to confront anybody who's making these complaints against her. Other than that day of the veterinarian, she denied that the veterinarian was correct in the veterinarian's assessment of the health of the animals. And she's surrounded then by Brown County deputies when she's being asked to make these decisions. At some point, right about 1457, just after 1457-55 that day in the video, she was in the squad vehicle alone with Investigator Reed. And we have to remember, this was during the height of the COVID pandemic.
Well, she voluntarily got into the squad vehicle. Let's just put that aside. But I mean, I'm having a hard time understanding the proposition that she did not understand the information that was being provided to her. I mean, all of the discussions that led up to that conversation were highly detailed. She knew exactly where every single horse came from, who they belonged to. She knew about their medical history, their lesson programs. I mean, there was a lot of very detailed information that was provided, and it did not seem from watching the video, and I didn't see any testimony in the record that from any expert that watched the video that said it is clear that she did not understand what was going on at the time of these discussions. Is there evidence in the record to the contrary?
Yes. The evidence in the record of the contrary comes from Ms. Lamar's own testimony, where she speaks to the fact that the death of her stillborn baby. And the idea that when the veterinarian makes the comments about, you're not seeing what we're seeing here, you're not seeing reality. Reality for you is gone. And Ms. Lamar then goes right back to a dead newborn baby in her arms, to the point that she can't focus or concentrate. So despite the fact she's asking ridiculously simple questions and not seemingly understanding the context of the questions or the answers that she's getting, to the point where she's looking at a document and saying, I'm just trying to read it, expressing the idea that she can't. She reads and speaks English fluently. Her work involves negotiating contracts for a large tech concern. And here is a somewhat simple document compared to what she negotiates for work. And she can't figure out what this one page of information says because she has been so stressed out over the last 2 hours, because she's been told reality has escaped you. It's gone. You can no longer see what's even going on. And this was after hours of, and initially this was, oh, this is Investigator Reed. Hey, I remember you. You came out here to try to help me with my daughter. Although Ms. Lamar says, I don't know that he helped any. He was the one who came to help. Now this time he's coming and she's thinking he's here to help and he's not.
So Mr. Kuttner, your theory is duress. And it seems to me duress requires on the part of the county, either physical force or threat of physical force, or on the other hand, an unlawful threat. And so, I mean, can we set aside physical force or threat of physical force?
Yes, we can. I don't think any of the deputies threatened physical force against Ms. Lamar.
And so am I correct then in stating the legal proposition that you need to show the county made an unlawful threat?
Correct.
And what is the unlawful threat?
We're going to take all of your horses.
Well, I mean, why is that unlawful? I mean, the officer had a warrant for an investigation, and with the assistance of a veterinarian, at some point made determinations that some animals should be seized. Why is that unlawful, or I should say maybe why is it per se unlawful? Because I mean, perhaps it could be, there's a statutory avenue for challenging the officers and the veterinarian's assessment or determination. But anyway, so why was that an unlawful threat?
Because everybody agrees that not all of the animals were sick, emaciated, neglected, or in any other way fell under the ambit of the statute. Even the investigator says, well, if they weren't sick, we weren't going to take them. They didn't take some. The veterinarian said, these animals are fine. We're going to leave them here. Except that the threat was, we're taking them all. Lamar asked, well, which ones are you taking? There is no answer other than we're threatening to take them all. So there was no legal basis to justify their threatening to take them all. There was, in their minds.
Well, okay. What about the, I'm looking at the surrender and release form, which has the letterhead of the Hooved Animal Rescue Foundation. This document shows somebody wrote in the BCS number for seven of the animals. It's between 2 and 2.5. I mean, is that indicates, I mean, would you disagree that that score indicates a condition that warrants seizure?
I do. For one thing, Haneke came up with this BCS just to give an overall estimate of a horse's condition, and the scale being from 1 to 9, and of course, 1 being low, 9 being thin, 9 being heavy. But a 2 or even a 2.5 or even a 2 isn't ipso facto neglected. We could have somebody else, for example, as Lamar claims in this case, we have somebody else, an Iowa breeder who neglected animals, sent them up to Lamar. Lamar was doing everything that she could to rehabilitate and bring them back up to health. And then when Lamar finds out that she's not getting compensated in any way, says, no, I'm not going to keep paying for these out of pocket, sends them back. And that's when the complaint comes in. Now, we can flip this on its head and say, when the animals are boarded up, if the county is correct that they're neglected, is now Hooved Animal responsible for neglected animals? Because if the county is correct and that they're neglected, and now they're in the custody of Minnesota Hooved Animal, are they now then Hooved Animal responsible for neglected animals? Just because we
I just want to follow up about the legal defense that your legal challenge. So earlier we were talking about how your challenge is that she was under duress at the time of signing the relinquishment of these seven animals. And duress requires physical force or unlawful threats. How is her, and I'm very sympathetic to her circumstances and her condition and her history, but how is her ability to comprehend the contract probative of the legal defense that you're asserting here, duress? It seems like it might be probative of a different defense that wasn't asserted, competency.
The defense of duress, the state of her defense of duress involves the state of mind of the person signing the document. Her will was overborne by the fact of the four deputies and the veterinarian all telling her that she's not seeing what she's seeing. And with,
is there some authority in support of that proposition, that that's part of the duress defense, Minnesota?
Directly on point, no, but the duress defense is a subjective standard. We're dealing with the individual who is the subject of the duress. We're not dealing with, for example, myself or the court. Were we to put our shoes or some sort of a reasonable person in the shoes of Candy Lamar, we're putting Candy Lamar in Candy Lamar's shoes. And Candy Lamar was under duress that day because of the statements made, because of the investigation that was done, because of the presence of the deputies. There are several there. There are several more that appear throughout the day. There's a veterinarian there who says, you are not doing this correctly. And Candy Lamar, in her own mind, was saying, I've done everything and then some to take care of these horses. They get Olympic quality care. The feed that they were given, the training that they were given, was all up to snuff and all Olympic quality. And I see that my time is almost up. I would just ask that I be able to finish my thought.
Yes, go ahead. Get some up quickly.
Quickly. The amount of work and effort, several employees, the size of the farm, the number of renovations that Lamar's were doing on that farm, all to make this a heaven or haven, either word works, I think, for horses, for equines. And the idea that they would take in other animals that were neglected, rehabilitate them, and then send them off once they were healthy, that was their only goal. I would ask the court at the end of argument and at the end of the decision to rule in favor of Candy Lamar, either in reversing the district court's decision or in allowing us to have a hearing to discuss and to request the return of the animals based on the animal's health. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Cutner, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. All right, thank you, sir. Counsel, go ahead.
Good morning, may it please the court.
Just one moment, Mr. Cutner, you can turn your video back on. Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. If I may start over, may it please the court and counsel. My name is Andrea Leeser, and I am representing the respondent in this case, Brown County. Your Honors, there are four issues for this court to decide here this morning. There is a plethora of facts that the court must sift through. However, the fact of the matter is that Ms. Candy Lamar was not under duress, and Judge Dougherty's findings of fact absolutely support his conclusions of law that she voluntarily surrendered the equines to the Brown County Sheriff's Office on November 23rd, 2020 at her farm site in Brown County, Minnesota. Ms. Lamar, the appellant in this case, not only voluntarily relinquished any ownership of those animals in this case, she also waived any claim of a due process violation by failing to raise it at the district court level with Judge Dougherty. She also voluntarily waived any interest in the surrendered animals, the 7 horses and the 3 donkeys that she voluntarily relinquished to the custody of Brown County on November 23rd.
I mean, I guess the question is really how voluntary was it? I mean, I did watch the video. She was very concerned about the viability of her business on an ongoing basis in the event that the county seized certain of the animals, and she was attempting to negotiate the retention of certain of the animals. And it did seem to me that she felt as though she didn't have much of a choice in the situation. Her choice was all or nothing.
Your Honor, you are accurate that Ms. Lamar absolutely negotiated which animals, which equines stayed on her place so that it would support her business as well as the riding program, and which animals she was willing to surrender to Brown County. It was not an all or nothing situation. She worked tirelessly with the veterinarian, Dr. Peterson, and Investigator Reed, and in consultation with her adult son, Mr. Hoth, as to which animals she was willing to surrender and which animals she did not want to go. In fact, if you review the transcript, which I know that this court will or has already, she made several statements to Dr. Peterson that she could take them. She could take which horses. She could take Mini Bit. She would surrender the donkeys. They called Mini Bit a pasture pig. They said that she was not useful to the program. Ms. Lamar also actively handpicked, cherry-picked, if you will, which animals were going to be returned to which individuals, such as the farrier, Jesse Kettner, such as a family friend, Ms. Erin Friesen. So Ms. Lamar absolutely did negotiate. She had the option under the statute 343, which allows her to either A, voluntarily surrender those animals and thereby relinquish all rights and interests in them, or B, to allow them to be taken into custody, to post a security bond to secure any disposition of them, and thereby request a hearing in district court within 10 days of receipt of that seizure. And should she choose to have that hearing or request to have that hearing, the statute clearly defines that she would then be entitled to have a hearing in district court within 5 days of her request for such a hearing. Ms. Lamar did not do that. Ms. Lamar, in this case, chose to voluntarily surrender those 7 horses and 3 donkeys to Brown County, as evidenced in what became the heart of this matter, the squad car conversation that she had captured on body camera with Investigator Reed. In that conversation, that 16-minute conversation, Investigator Reed goes over the documents with Ms. Lamar. As Your Honor has already placed onto the record, she was asking inquisitive questions. She was asking detailed questions. She was asking questions about whether or not she would be arrested, whether or not signing any documents would thereby be an admission of guilt for any potential criminal liability. Investigator Reed answered those questions as adequately and as accurately as he could, indicating to her she was not under arrest. She would not be arrested that day. She was free to choose. She was free to take the papers with her. He had the opportunity to take which animals warranted to be seized based upon the observations and the BSC of Dr. Peterson's observations that day, and had the search warrant available if Ms. Lamar did not want to surrender animals, and if there were actually animals there that did warrant needing to be seized due to possible neglect or mistreatment. During that conversation in the squad car, Investigator Reed answered every question that Ms. Lamar asked. She even paused for a moment and explained to Investigator Reed she was reading the comments. She was reading what the paperwork required of her. There is no question that there is, as asked and placed on the record by Judge Johnson, that there was absolutely no physical threat here. And the appellant is trying to argue that because two deputies with the Brown County Sheriff's Office came with the judicial authority of a search warrant based upon probable cause issued by Judge Dougherty to the farm place, discussed the animals, went on a tour with Ms. Lamar, allowed her to show them and guide them where the animals were, where they were being fed, what feed was available, what hay was available, and then a negotiation ensued, which animals could be surrendered, would be surrendered, needed to be seized, or needed to be rehomed, that is somehow taking away her free will. The comment that, I'm sorry, is there a question, Your Honor?
Actually, I do have a question. Is that warrant in the record? I haven't seen it.
Your Honor, it was not placed in the record. That is correct, because it was not, and it was not challenged by the appellant. And at the time that this evidentiary hearing took place in Brown County District Court with Judge Dougherty, an active and open criminal investigation was undergoing, and it has become a part of there's two pending criminal files now against Ms. Lamar, and it is part of one of the underlying criminal files.
I have a question about the warrant. I guess, is it a standard search warrant, or is it different and customized for purposes of section 343.22, which authorizes not just a search as an officer might normally do that, but also it authorizes an investigation. And I'm wondering if this warrant was tailored to the statute.
The simplest answer is both, Your Honor. It is in form, the usual typical search warrant that is issued. The application does reference specifically the statute, as well as asking for permission to allow Dr. Peterson as the veterinarian to accompany the deputies and to make those decisions if she deemed it necessary that there were in fact animals that needed to be seized. So while the form itself is a usual standard search warrant that is customary to criminal cases, if you will, it absolutely in its application cites to the statute as well as to the requirements of law enforcement to bring that veterinarian with them as well, and also names Dr. Peterson specifically as the agent who would be accompanying law enforcement as is required by the statute. May I continue, Your Honor? Is there any other follow-up to that?
No, thank you for your answer.
Thank you, Your Honor. What this court is being asked to do today is to review Judge Daugherty's findings of fact as well as his conclusions of law. We have established in the record that Ms. Lamar, based upon her testimony in complete contrast to the evidence, specifically Exhibit A, as well as Exhibit B in the district court record, show that Ms. Lamar was not under duress. In fact, Ms. Lamar tried her best in attempting to reach out to her therapist, Ms. Walsh, as shown in the email she sent to her in Exhibit B, to concoct or come up with this defense that she was under duress on November 23rd, 2020. That is in the district court record, and both Ms. Lamar and Ms. Walsh were available for cross-examination before Judge Daugherty, and his factual findings show that Ms. Lamar took very specific actions to solicit an opinion, if you will, from Ms. Walsh to try to support this defense that she was in fact under duress. When in reality, Exhibit A shows that Ms. Lamar absolutely knew exactly what she was doing. As iterated by Mr. Kittner here this morning on behalf of appellant, she is a high profiled employee who does negotiations for a company on top of running her business, on top of running the writing program, on top of running the farm. She knew exactly what she was doing. She knew exactly what questions to ask. So the heart of the matter is, was she under duress? And the answer to that question is no. She voluntarily handed over which animals she handpicked to be surrendered to the custody of Brown County. And after she had an opportunity to—
So Mr. Kuttner's argument, if I understand it correctly, is that her state of mind was such that she was unable to comprehend really what she was signing at the time she signed it. And I'll have you respond to that as to whether that is something that can rise to the level of this duress under Minnesota law, or if it falls under some other category of legal defense.
Your Honor, you are absolutely correct that for Ms. Lamar to assert that she did not know what she was signing, that she went into a state of derealization or deassociation, does not support what is necessary for a defense of duress. There is absolutely no unlawful threat that would have taken away her free will to decide how to handle herself in that contract negotiation. Instead, what the appellant should have asserted was instead that she had a mental illness defense, or in fact that she was incompetent to be signing those documents. That is absolutely not what appellant asserted at the district court level in bringing this civil action, and it has not yet been asserted in either of the criminal files that are currently pending in Brown County either. So the court is absolutely correct that the state of mind that Ms. Lamar has tried to establish is inaccurate and inapplicable to what is necessary for duress, because the appellant here cannot establish the first part of the duress test. And that is that there was some unlawful threat to Ms. Lamar on November 23rd, 2020. There was not. And therefore, she cannot get to that next step in the test to show what her state of mind was. Rather, she has potentially or could have had a defense for incompetency or mental illness, neither of which were asserted at the district court level. I see that my time is almost up. Are there any other questions I can answer for the panel this morning?
Anything else from the panel this morning? All right, we have no other questions. Anything else, Ms. Light? Is it Leiser?
Leiser, thank you.
Leiser, thank you. Thank you, Council.
In very brief closing, I would just say that what Ms. Lamar is asking this court to do is to basically redo or undo a case of buyer's remorse. And what the district court's factual findings supported in the conclusions of law actually require here that this court should affirm the district court's order. And Your Honor, I would ask respectfully that this court deny appellant's motion and affirm the district court's order. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
All right, thank you, counsel. Counsel, we'll reset the clock for you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Judge Frisch. Ms. Leiser spoke about Ms. Lamar working with the veterinarian and investigator Reed in determining which animals would go. But in my mind, that's like working with an armed robber, how much the armed robber is going to take from you. Are they going to take your life, or are they just going to take your wallet, or are they going to take your clothes as well? I don't know that Ms. Lamar was free to choose because the veterinarian was the one who made the decisions. The veterinarian said these will go, and Lamar begged her not to take them all. Please let me keep Ted, let me keep Ocean. I understand, you know, some of these horses came from somebody else. Maybe they can go back there. If you're telling me that I can't have the 16 or the 19, including the donkeys, if I've got to send a couple back, I'll send a couple back. But I don't know that there was anything that suggested that Ms. Lamar couldn't handle or couldn't manage the number of horses that she had.
Let me just focus on the nature of what you're claiming is the unlawful threat, which is I'm going to take all of your animals. So it also strikes me that it was evident well before Ms. Lamar actually signed the document that they were not going to take all of the animals, that there was some negotiated process where she was going to identify the animals that could be taken, and there was some agreement that was reached, and that not all of the animals were going to be taken. And that discussion lasted quite some time. So how does that weigh in this, in the analysis as to whether she was really under duress at the time that she signed the document, when it was evident that not all of the animals were going to be taken?
Your Honor, I don't know that it was evident to Ms. Lamar that not all of them would be taken. Because when law enforcement arrived, it wasn't evident to Ms. Lamar that any of them would be taken, let alone that any of the things that transpired the rest of the day or in the months proceeding would have happened.
But my point is that there were extended discussions where certain animals were identified as we're going to take this one. And she would say, no, I don't want you to take this one. And then they would back off from taking that animal and they talk about a different animal. Or then she would volunteer some animals that would be taken as an alternative.
She did, Your Honor, she did at some point volunteer both the donkeys and Minibit, the pony, as alternative animals. She volunteered Glitter, one of Stacy Gady's former animals, to be taken. But at some point, she was offering that to wrest back the taking of the unlawful threat, which is we're going to take these animals that are not even close to neglected. Nobody's arguing we're neglected. But if I can get you to not take these, then I will let you have those. And this was literally horse trading at some point. But Ms. Lamar was under the impression that they were going to take them all. And so it was a begging. It was, please take my wallet. Please, I'll give you my keys to my car. Please just don't take my life. Don't hurt my family. And this was a couple of days before Thanksgiving. So Ms. Lamar over and over and over asked, am I going to be arrested? Am I going to be charged? What's going to happen? Panicked. And although she didn't outwardly appear panicked, inside her mind was a mess. And I don't think that she could concentrate or focus on anything.
So what you're saying, counsel, what you're saying is that the unlawful threat was the threat to take more animals than would be authorized.
Correct. And I would ask the court to consider whether she lacked competency to sign the agreement, because I don't know that there's a contract here. I'm not sure that there is a contract. If there's no contract, there is no agreement, because what is Lamar's benefit of the bargain? There is no benefit of the bargain. There was merely some sort of vague promise that it will go better for you if you sign them over. Well, things certainly didn't go better. They charged her with two different criminal files. They've taken a bunch of her animals. They shut down her business and she's suspended from work. I don't know how things could have gone worse for Ms. Lamar based on what happened here. And the promise was this.
Mr. Kuttner, so in your appellates, in your brief, I believe you say that the applicable standard of review is de novo. It seems to me that given the decision that you're challenging and the reasons for your challenge, it seems like it's very fact dependent. It seems like you're challenging a factual finding based on the district court's analysis or weighing of the evidence. It seems like it should be a clear error standard of review. Do you disagree with that?
Judge, I see my time is up. May I answer the question?
Yeah, Mr. Kuttner, go ahead and answer the question.
I do disagree, Your Honor. I think that this is a mixed question of fact and law, because we're not just doing a extensive review into what the facts show, but also then how does the law support or decide what should happen based on these facts. And so because it's a question of mixed fact and law, I would say that it's a de novo review.
All right, counsel, thank you very much for your arguments. The matter is submitted and we'll issue an opinion within the statutory time period. All right. We'll stand in recess. Thank you.
Thank you.